The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Earlier this year, an armed clash broke out along the border of these two countries, resulting in numerous deaths and thousands of people displaced from their homes. It was starting because of America's strong commitment to stability and peace in this region and every region where we can do it. My administration immediately began working to prevent the conflict from escalating. I held phone calls with both leaders. I was actually at Turnberry in Scotland when I did this. And we had a lot of phone calls. Well, this is so exciting because we did something that a lot of people said couldn't be done. And we saved maybe millions of lives on this one peace deal itself. And I'll tell you what makes me so happy is the two countries we're dealing with and the third that helped so much. I appreciate so much. Maybe it couldn't have been done without you, but they really like each other. I'm not used to that when I do these deals. Usually there's a lot of hatred. They liked each other, so it made it a little bit easier. But millions of people are alive today because of this peace treaty.
We, of course, admire your tenacity, your courage, because the world needs leaders who promote peace strongly. And to achieve that, you have to break some rules. And thank the president for his effort to secure peace in many parts of the world, including Gaza, and urging him to remain focused and ensure that there's a comprehensive peace that the world requires. And I am delighted, truly, President, to hear from you personally how determined you are to ensure that peace is achieved in the most intractable areas, almost impossible. But you did it, and we have shown our support and call on the United States in particular to continue this with the support of many, not only neighbors, but the part of the world.
Today mark a historic moment, profound significance for Cambodia and Thailand, a day that reaffirms our shared conviction that peace is always possible when nations have the courage and wisdom to pursue it together. On behalf of the Cambodian peoples, I wish to express my deepest gratitude to President Donald J. Trump for his decisive leadership and steadfast commitment to supporting the lasting peace between Cambodia and Thailand, and for his tireless efforts to make it a reality. I have nominated President Donald J. Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, and he...
So as you know, this is one of eight wars that my administration has ended in just 8 months. We're averaging one a month. There is only one left, although I heard that Pakistan and Afghanistan have started up, but I'll get that solved very quickly. And I just feel it's something I can do. I do it nicely. I don't need to do it, I guess, but if I can take time and save millions of lives, that's really a great thing. I can't think of anything better to do. I shouldn't say it's a hobby because it's so much more serious than a hobby, but it's something that I'm good at and it's something I love to do. The United Nations should be doing this, but they don't do it.
Only one war left, and peace, I guess, will cover the earth. You can see why we've been talking about this for a number of weeks. And again, there's definitely some positives here. This man is a doer. I mean, he's leaving on the weekend, flying to Southeast Asia, trying to make peace. I mean, you compare it with the previous administration, as my producer was pointing out this morning, and most often he was at the beach on the weekend. But here is the president of the United States, and it's almost like he's relentlessly traveling the globe to make the world a better place. Again, you can't take away from his desire, his sincerity, But as we'll see here in a moment, we have to keep our minds in the Word of God and make sure that we see this world from God's perspective. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting. It'll be Friday before you know it. That's just the way that these weeks unfold. To focus first on the energy, the action, I mean, the fact that this particular president is a doer, and you see it even with the ballroom, and I know heads are still exploding over that. But you see some ambition. I mean, we talked on Friday about the blessing of responsibility. And Herbert Armstrong was a man with just boundless ambition. It was misguided early on in life, but when it was channeled in God's direction, well, look at what God was able to do through him. Look at King David. What an ambitious man he was. Whether it was celebrating, dancing for God, or building a house for God. It's really incredible what God can do with that if you are ambitious. And we know, again, in the positive sense, I mean, God did save America by the hand of Jeroboam, as it says in 2 Kings 14. This is further ahead in my notes, but clip number two is, I think, Neil Ferguson talking about just how consequential this presidency is. Play clip two.
We are in the fifth year of the Trump era, and I think it is not too early to tell that he is one of the most consequential presidents, certainly of the post-war era. Think of the transformation he has brought about in the way politics itself functions. In the United States, Donald Trump has transformed the nature of political discourse. That alone is consequential. He broke up a post-war order, a set of assumptions, not least of which was that free trade should be the basis of U.S. International economic policy. No, he's a transformative figure, and I think we can tell. Now, does it end in tears or in triumph? That we can't tell. And that won't be obvious until the end of his term. But it's clear that he's drastically altered the way that American politics works. And I'd go further. I think he's even more consequential internationally. He's broken the post-war international order. He's radically altered it, and I think irreversibly altered it. And any European will agree with that. They don't like it, but they'll admit everything has changed because of Donald Trump.
As he brings out there, it's very consequential, but, you know, we have to wait until the end to see. You know, are we going to be celebrating and rejoicing, or will we be in tears? You think about that with respect to the ambassadors for peace. With so much, I mean, you can certainly see how that these prophecies that talk about the ambassadors weeping bitterly. I mean, the stage is being set. One more war, and then that's the end. If we can just stop one more war, you know, Russia, Ukraine, if we put that one to rest, everything's done. Everything's solved. Never mind what you're reading about Hamas. Just know that a peace deal was made. And on average, it's happening once per month. It's phenomenal. Well, in many ways, as I say, it is consequential. And there is a sincere desire. Herbert Armstrong wrote back in 1972, this is from The Plain Truth. He said, heads of governments and others have been trying to bring about world peace since the very dawn of history, but they don't know the way to peace. As I say, we have to keep coming back to God's mindset. What is God's view about peace and the way to peace? There's lots of peace agreements. But, you know, there was a time back in the 1930s when there were a lot of peace agreements as well. And what happened? I mean, the world was celebrating when Neville Chamberlain came back from Germany waving a peace paper. He finally got Hitler to sign a peace agreement. Peace was in the air. We've got to learn from these lessons of history. And more importantly, look into the prophecies of God and see what he says. I'll get to that in a second. There is a cause for the lack of peace in the world. And there is ever to be, and if there is ever to be world peace, there has to be a cause to produce it. I mean, even in that cold open, you heard President Trump say, you know what, it is interesting, this one, because both sides seem to like each other. Usually when I'm, you know, officiating a deal like this, they hate each other. Well, that's the root cause of war and violence and crime. Hatred, the spirit of murder. That right there tells you that any agreement, it's not going to hold permanently. It's just going to be a temporary thing. They're all transitory, these agreements, these pieces of paper that bring two sides together. I took you through all 7-8 points that Hamas has violated the terms of the ceasefire agreement, and they did it within days. But just give them more time. That's what we're being told. Even as you see this administration just lower the boom on Canada because of an offensive commercial. And President Trump's out there saying, yeah, I'm not going to talk to Canada for a long time. Look at the leeway we give to Hamas, of all people. And yet our brothers to the north, our Canadian friends. No, you put a commercial on that I didn't like. So we're going to raise the tariffs and we're not going to have a relationship. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. How can we extend so much liberty and leeway and opportunity and time to Hamas, an organization established for the sole purpose of murdering Jews? There should be no lenience. I mean, just looking at it worldly speaking, obviously we know that with God's government, that's the solution to peace. Isaiah 9 and verse 7. Of the increase of his government and peace. There's going to be no end. Eternal peace is coming. But not in this age. Not in this age. He says, and what is that cause? What is the way to peace? It's cooperation, a spirit of outgoing concern for the good and welfare of others. And the spirit of competition is the very opposite of that way. I mean, we're celebrating a deal with China. And here again, I mean, we've been in a trade war with China for the better part of this year. But now we've got the framework in place. And is it really going to punish China for all of its nefarious activity, its anti-American activity? Or is it just going to put a little Band-Aid on things and then the fight goes on? Mankind does not see it that way. The Spirit of God is the spirit of love, of outgoing concern for the welfare of others, the spirit of giving, serving, sharing, helping. It says in our present generation, world peace is going to come. But how? By changing human nature. We've taken you through that passage before, Ezekiel 36. We have to get to root causes. If you come to an agreement and both sides still hate each other, well, it's only a matter of time before there's armed conflict. That's been man's history. That's been recent history. I mean, Hamas, they got control of Gaza in 2005. And for 18 years leading up to October 7, they were attacking, they were bombing, they were kidnapping Israelis. And then October 7 happens. It was just a natural progression from 18 years of murdering Jews. And then you have for 2 years Israel fighting back, vowing to just obliterate Hamas. Well, they had 2 years to do it. But then, you know, then the peacemakers showed up and said, no, you can't finish them off. You can't go all the way. Because we want peace. We want peace. Just one more war is left on this war-torn planet. So says the president. Is that true? Are we about to have universal peace and prosperity? It says here, the mighty world ruler is soon to come. Speaking of Christ, he will come to change human nature. He is coming to bring us at last world peace. You want to talk about a consequential administration? Wait until this one shows up. Jesus Christ's family government. You look at the world of politics and human rule, governments of men. As I was telling the team this morning, you just long for a time when that's all going to be over. I love that paragraph in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book where Mr. Armstrong talks about just the end of political campaigns, spending billions and billions of dollars to try to win the presidency. And they're already talking about the midterm elections next year. Yeah, we got to gear up for it. We've got to gear up for it. We've got to stop Trump. We've got to stop. Play the Gavin Newsom clip where he worries about Trump getting a third term. That seems to be in the news cycle a fair bit.
His presidency de facto ends next November. If we're successful, we the people are successful in taking back the House and making sure that
you
we're
really
successful.
Believe, Governor, if the Democrats take back power in the House, his presidency's over?
De facto, as we know it today, fire and fury. Signifying maybe something. But finally, you have rebalanced this system. Co-equal branch of government begins to assert itself. It appears again. If you have a Speaker Johnson, we may have a third term of President Trump. I really believe that.
Here comes a third term. For he really believes it. He also really believes he can be president. Won't it be nice when we can finally put an end to the political maneuvering of all of these individuals looking out for themselves first. Kamala's come out and said she may run again. Republicans are saying, I hope you do. This is from the Morning Brief. A senior U.S. official reportedly warned the Gaza deal could be destroyed after Israel, with America's support, vetoed Turkish troops participating in the Gaza Stabilization Force. Now, you could see why Israel would oppose this, because remember, it was Erdogan who came to the peace discussions in Egypt and said, I'm not going if Bibi's going to be there. If he's in the room, that's it for me. I'm out. That's the spirit of hatred that President Trump admitted he encounters everywhere he goes, except for the one, I guess, with Malaysia. But everywhere else, they get him, they twist the arms, they get him to sign the agreement, but there's hatred in the air. And so the root cause of war and violence, it's not being solved. It's certainly being exposed, but there is no change in nature. But there is one coming. You talk about a transformative administration. That would be Christ's ruling government on this earth. Let me just read it. Revelation 11. I've mentioned this a few times in previous programs, but I don't think I've put it in my notes. Revelation 11. It would be good to read all the middle of Revelation, by the way, Revelation 10 and 11. I mean, it all revolves around mystery of the ages, if you can believe it. The mystery should have been finished. I mean, the Worldwide Church of God was poised and ready to just blast this world with God's truth, with this book. This book that explains everything. It tells you why human civilization is the way it is. It tells you what's wrong with governments of men. It tells you why we can't go the way that will lead to peace. But there is coming a transformative, consequential government administration. Verse 15 of Revelation 11, it says, "And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world," all of them, "the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." Now, you know what's another angle to this? President Trump, again, he's sincerely seeking peace. He sees himself as a peacemaker. He sees himself as good at it. And he's also surrounded by a chapel. He's surrounded by spiritual advisors. He's surrounded by individuals that evidently are supposed to know the Bible. Do you think he's getting counsel from them on verses like this? Or 1 Thessalonians 5, which we'll go through in a second? It's all there. It's in Isaiah. It's everywhere. Well, good for America. Good that we avoided being blotted out entirely. But now what? Now what is God trying to show us? Well, he's trying to show us our sins so that we can turn to him in repentance, in humility, in faith. That's how fragile this is, Mr. Hilliker writes. The whole thing, speaking of the Gaza peace deal, the whole thing could be torpedoed by Israel refusing to turn Gaza over to a country whose leader has compared Netanyahu to Hitler and called Israel a genocidal terrorist state. If Israel doesn't agree to turn it over to Turkey, then the whole agreement is out the window. Just a few weeks in. And then you contrast it, as I say, with the approach that we're taking to Canada. It says, U.S. President Donald Trump has ruled out a meeting with Prime Minister Mark Carney this week while the pair are both in Asia. Trump spoke to reporters on Air Force One en route to Japan, saying he won't be meeting with Carney for a long time. No, not so with Hamas. We'll meet with them any time of the day, any day. He also says he doesn't know when the new tariffs on Canada will come into effect. Trump threatened to add a 10% tariff on top of existing levies on Saturday, saying he was angry about an anti-tariff TV ad. He was upset by a TV commercial, and now Canada has to pay. I mean, is this a spirit of love and cooperation? And again, I say that knowing America's been getting ripped off by other countries because everyone's in it for themselves. That's the spirit of competition and strife. That's what Satan the devil, as God of this world, is always continually promoting and broadcasting. And the whole world just goes along. And we think that we're just on the brink of worldwide peace, prosperity, and happiness. Look, I mean, we're trying to make amends with Hamas. Forget Canada. No, Canada needs to be punished. But look at what we're doing with Hamas and Qatar and Turkey. Or China. We fixed it. Is it going to hold? We'll soon find out. My father had an article. This is from The Trumpet Magazine, April 2020. "The truth is, nobody can bring peace in a family or a nation apart from God. God must be involved if you're going to have real peace. You will never have peace any other way." So, you know, if I were a spiritual advisor to President Trump, I would say, you know what? If God's not involved, this isn't going to hold. It's not going to stay. It's certainly not going to be eternal. And I've got to tell you the truth. I've got to be honest with you. I can't just whitewash this. I can't just sugarcoat it and say, you know what, I know these two sides, they hate each other, and Hamas wants to kill Jews, but if you just get that paper signed, why, you'll win the Nobel Peace Prize. These leaders seem to have more faith in their enemies than in God. Well, that's a big statement. That's my father, 5 years ago. We have more faith in our enemies than we do in God. How much faith do we have in the all-powerful God who could instantly bring us peace if we would look to him? It says that shows where the real problem is. And he goes on and he talks about Jeremiah 17 and the heart of man and how that we're cursed if we put our faith, our trust in man. Again, as I said last week, you see a lot of prophecies lining up to be fulfilled simultaneously, being lulled into a false sense of security. Do you think that's possible, given that what we're hearing constantly is how much peace there is in this world? What does the Bible say about when they say there's peace everywhere? It's breaking out everywhere. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 3 says, when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes. When they talk about it, when they say it, when they proclaim it, when they sign it, then look out. That certainly happened after Neville Chamberlain waved that peace paper. Wasn't that long after that. And war broke out. Just back up to 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 1, just to get the context here. This is the Apostle Paul writing. It says, but of the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. I mean, you're informed. You should be. I've laid it all out. You see, Paul, he talked about prophecy just like Jesus did. When the disciples approached Christ and said, yeah, can you tell us what's going to happen before your return to this earth? Sure. Jesus didn't just dismiss it and say, what are you talking about? I mean, the world we're living in right now is filled with peace. Peace is breaking out everywhere. Jesus said, just know that before I return to this earth, here's what the world's going to look like. And believe me, it was not a pretty picture. I don't have time to go through all of Luke 21 and Matthew 24, Mark 13, the Olivet Prophecy. This is one of the first letters that he wrote. And he spent the better part of 1 Thessalonians talking about the return of Christ. His mind was on a really transformative, consequential administration that is the government of God. It's established in the church now, but soon it's to be established over all the earth, as I just read to you. Revelation 11. Or read what it says in Acts 3, verses 19 to 21. God's government is what's been missing from this earth since Lucifer's rebellion. God's government is uppermost in his mind because, as we just read, that's what's going to bring all nations, all kingdoms, underneath the righteous rule of God. And then there will be peace. Verse 2, it says, for yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. It does come as a thief to those that don't know the truth. They're not expecting the return of Christ. That's what your Bible says. They're expecting peace. They're talking about peace. And verse 3, as I read, for when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. See, suddenly, it's going to happen so suddenly. The Phillips translation says, catastrophe will sweep down upon them as suddenly and inescapably as birth pangs to a pregnant woman. It's just one day you're just carrying on, and the next day you're in travail. It's just like Jesus said about the days of Noah. In the last days, it's going to be just like the days of Noah, where they were eating and drinking and marrying. They were just carrying on. They were just living their lives. Peace was breaking out. And then the flood came. That's what Christ compares our day to. These are all big statements. They're big when they come out of the Bible. They're big statements. Verse 4, it says, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief." See, in the family of God, you know. You know better. You're not in darkness. You're in the light. You see. We talk about Bible prophecy, shedding light on events of this world. You can understand why it's happening. You can understand. I mean, even the trade agreement with China, in the big picture, we know that trade war is going to intensify. And eventually, America is going to be squeezed out. If the so-called deal benefits China more than America's long-term security, then, well, that's another win for China. But, hey, just make a deal. That's the thinking. Verse 5, it says, "You are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Our minds have been opened to the truth." And so we're alert. We're locked in. We're watching world events. We're praying always. Verse 6 says, "Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober." We have to be spiritually alert. We have to be sober-minded. We have to be awake. Paul talks about this in Romans 13. It says in verse 7 here, "For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet the hope of salvation." I mean, he gets into that armor of God in greater detail over in Ephesians 6. I mean, we've got to put it on daily so that we can stand, so that we can face the attacks of the devil and stand firm in the truth, in God's knowledge. Our foundation, our sure foundation, that's what Bible prophecy is. It is sure. It is solid. This is from, maybe we could just take a short break and transition over to Jeroboam the Builder. I mean, it's, when you think about, just to give you a little bit in advance, when you think about Amos 7, you know, he's, the king's chapel is there, and it's got the kingdom's court. I mean, it's referred to as a kingdom. He has king-like authority and powers. And, you know, when we visited Mar-a-Lago a couple years ago, I mean, it makes you think of a palace. There's not that many structures like that in America. I mean, you might see castles and things in Europe, but in the United States, the closest, I think we even said it on this program, Mar-a-Lago is about the closest thing that we have to a palace. And then here comes President Trump. He takes a wrecking ball to the East Wing, and then he's building this ballroom that's going to sit 1,000 people. And as he says, you know, future presidents are going to be thanking me for this, even though they're freaking out now, the radical left. They'll thank him for it later. When we come back, we'll give you the freak out update, the manufactured outrage over this awesome expansion project on the White House grounds. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
At what's so disturbing about this, Joe, is when you talk to people who aren't journalists, don't work in politics, on both sides of the aisle, Americans just cannot understand how the president has been able to do this. They are watching daily the destruction, or they were, of the East Wing, and no one is stopping him. And I think it does get back to, yes, Congress is feckless. Yes, the Supreme Court has been feckless. But we have heard presidents, both Republican and Democrat, and others defend for decades now the importance of institutions. And when it comes down to it, everyday Americans say, in my own life, I'm not seeing these institutions working for me. Prices are still up. I can't afford a house. You know, I see billionaires gaining access in both parties. And now those institutions have failed to stop Donald Trump from destroying the people's house. And
so, Joe, this is the presidency as wrecking ball. I think that's one reason that destruction of the East Wing has really upset people in a way that even Trump's most outrageous other actions haven't. Peggy Noonan is a very balanced, sensible person, but she was anguished by what she was seeing. And I think it comes down to the sense that we all have. We've been to the White House or certainly seen photographs of it, and we think of it as the people's house. It was built deliberately to be understated. It's not a palace like Victorian rulers have had. It's the people's house. And Donald Trump has turned it into his own personal property, and contrary to the way it was described. Trump seems to have learned nothing from this, but I do think lots of other people watching this have learned a lot, and it's going to continue to bother them.
But first, I just want to ask you, I mean, looking at the, you know, these images that we have been seeing throughout the days and nights this week, what goes through your mind?
You know, it's just been so heartbreaking. I literally have wept sometimes. Don't worry, I won't cry on your show, but I literally have. I mean, it's just nothing I thought I'd ever see, you know, that kind of destruction. I mean, it's gone. That whole wing of the White House is gone.
The things that these people are outraged by, it tells you a lot about their thinking. It's a building. It's a massive expansion project. I mean, you look at the history of Jeroboam in the Old Testament. Here again, he was a builder. He was looking to expand and grow America's power or Israel's power anciently. That's just more proof, isn't it? That he came in the spirit of Jeroboam, as was prophesied. But again, to see these people so upset by this, it's comical. As I was telling my producer, I mean, given what's happened, given what goes on in the Oval Office, or what has happened in history, some pretty despicable acts of sin. You know, spiritually speaking, you should take a wrecking ball to that, wreck the Oval Office, and that's what Josiah would have done. King Josiah. Just obliterate it. It's a building, and there's a lot of sinful behavior that went on in there. I mean, what does God think? You have to get God's perspective. I mean, what outrages God? A wrecking ball with a wing on the White House? Or is he outraged by unrepentant, sinful behavior? Sins that just get worse and worse and worse. Evil men and seducers waxing worse and worse and worse here in the last days. But just coming back to, again, I don't want to dwell on all of the negative, but this is an impressive structure. And, you know, who was it last week that talked about Trump building another tacky hotel? These people are so blinded by Trump derangement that they just can't look at this and say, you know what, thanks for doing this and for not charging the taxpayers a cent, a penny. The teardown of the White House's East Wing this week is a Rorschach test Many see the rubble as a metaphor for President Donald Trump's reckless disregard of norms and the rule of law, a reflection of his willingness to bulldoze history and a temple to a second Gilded Age paid for by corporate donors. Who actually took a wrecking ball to America's history? Well, we can't even put all the blame on the dear leader. But, I mean, he was an eight-year wrecking ball, that man. And all those talking heads you just saw there, they didn't care. They were applauding it. Yeah, tear down the Constitution. Take out Americans. Go around Congress. Just bypass them. You got a pen and a phone? Good for you. 8 years of that. And not a peep from Morning Meltdown. Not an ounce of criticism. But here they take out a wall. They take out a room for, what, the First Lady? I don't think there's anybody in America that's going to really lose sleep over this at night. Maybe a former First Lady, I don't know. You have to build the White House at some point. I mean, it's had phases of development over the centuries. The People's House. It is the People's House. And when the people put you in there, you shouldn't be carrying on with acts of fornication, adultery, those kinds of things. In the Oval Office, of all places. What must God think? If Josiah was at the helm, he'd say, you know what? Let's just pulverize it. Just crush it. Turn it to dust. And then we'll build something even more impressive. That's the way God wants us to be with sin. Just get in there and pulverize it. Put it away. Stop doing it. Put it, bury it in the ground. And then let God build something really impressive, spiritually speaking. In classic Trump fashion, the president is pursuing a reasonable idea in the most jarring manner possible. Privately, many alumni of the Biden and Obama White Houses acknowledge the long overdue need for an event space like what Trump is creating. Yeah, Obama was having Jay-Z and Beyonce there every other weekend, partying away, the band's playing, and who knows what else is going on. And they didn't have enough space. The dear leader never built a big ballroom. Here they admit, privately, those that worked for the dear leader and the fake president, they kind of want a big ballroom. It says here, preservationists, however, express horror that Trump did not submit his plans to their scrutiny. Why? You didn't run this by the preservationists. What does that even mean? Who are the preservationists? This room, the state dining room seats 140. The East Room seats about 200. Trump says the ballroom at the center of his 90,000 square foot addition will accommodate 999 guests. I'm not sure why they wouldn't kick that up to 1,000, but leave that aside. Almost 1,000. Certainly you can fit in, you know, one more smallish individual. It says here, fortunately for Trump, the White House is exempt from some of the required regulations that other federal buildings must comply with. They don't like it. They can't control it. They want it, but it's got to be done their way. If Trump came out and said, I love little kitties, they would say kittens are to be blotted out. That's the way these people operate. Many homeowners have become red-pilled by their struggles to navigate the slow-as-molasses maze of government bureaucracy. I mean, they're saying all the quiet parts out loud. Here comes Trump. He's not going to let bureaucracy or the preservationists get in the way. He's just going forward. He says he's going to do it. Next day, you see the wrecking ball. I mean, the man is a doer. He's a man of action. This is why he has such a consequential presidency. And, of course, the critics hate it. They hate the fact that he gets things done, that he heads for Southeast Asia in the middle of the weekend. I mean, I don't even see him playing golf as much. I know he still loves it. The man is serving. Again, some of it's misguided, and you're not bringing God into the center of the peace process. Of course, I've noted that. I've got to give you God's perspective. But there are areas where, as I've said before also, it's impressive. The energy, the fighting spirit. Says here, the president has said the project will cost $300 million, but that he's raised $350 million from private donors. I mean, what's to criticize here? Trump joins a long list of presidents who have left their imprint on the White House. Theodore Roosevelt replaced greenhouses to construct the West Wing. Well, why did he do that? What did the preservationists say about creating the West Wing? It says here, William Howard Taft constructed the first Oval Office in 1909. Richard Nixon converted a swimming pool into the press briefing room in 1970. The modern East Wing wasn't even built until World War II to cover up an underground bunker. Harry Truman gutted the White House interior and added the balcony that bears his name. What was Harry Truman thinking? He gutted it? He gutted the people's house. He gutted it. But you had the press corps yesterday asking Trump about, you know, building a big, beautiful press room. He said, no, I don't want you guys to be that comfortable. Joking around with the press. Here he's doing something impressive, something big, something beautiful. Something that makes it more like a palace. It's like it comes straight out of Amos 7. My father said this. In 2019, he said, there is a man fulfilling the prophetic role of Amos in this end time. He leads a work commissioned to prophesy again. And of course, he confronts Amaziah, or Amaziah comes after him. Prophesy not again anymore at Bethel, Amaziah says, referring to the capital city. We could liken that to Washington, D.C. today, for it is the king's chapel and it is the king's court. He's got the chapel, he's got the court, he's got the kingdom's court. And he's building himself as his palace. And of course, the other side absolutely hates the fact that he's doing this, that they've lost their power. This is from, I guess I can skip. Just play this on his travels to Asia. Over the weekend and everything that's happening there with the trade deal with China and all the talks with Malaysia and others. This is from Fox News, clip one.
Meantime, President Trump, as you know, is in Malaysia right now, celebrating the closing of a key peace deal between Thailand and Cambodia. Of course, this is the beginning of a major trip to Asia for the president, headlined by that big meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping, ahead of what we're hearing about could be a major trade deal between the two countries. We'll see if that's a lot of bluster, if there's some meat on that bone.
And you're right. We'll see what happens with this big meeting with President Trump and China's leader Xi Jinping later this week in South Korea. But for now, some good news from President Trump's Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who says a framework agreement has been agreed to with China, which covers rare earth minerals. And here was President Trump arriving in Malaysia, breaking out his signature dance moves before getting serious, providing over that peace deal that you mentioned off the top, ending decades-long hostilities between Southeast Asian neighbors, Cambodia and Thailand. Here was President Trump earlier.
We saved millions of lives. I'm here on a mission of friendship and goodwill and to deepen our ties of commerce, to strengthen our common security, and to really promote strongly stability, prosperity, and peace.
And here was President Trump signing the agreement.
Stability, prosperity, and peace, except with Canada. Make sure that they get some higher tariffs. Just take care of that. I didn't like that commercial. You just look back at this year. The news gatherers put together the timeline. Is this going to lead to a permanent, in the case of China, is it going to lead to a permanent relationship where both sides are just swimming in dough? in the morning brief. America and China have stepped back from the brink of trade war. U.S. Secretary Scott Bessent confirmed yesterday that the two sides had the outlines of a deal in place. Yet you look at the timeline. February 1st, Trump announces 10% tariff on all Chinese imports. February 4th, China retaliates with 15% tariffs on U.S. coal and liquefied natural gas. 10% tariffs on U.S. crude oil, agricultural machinery, and such. March 3rd, the United States increases tariffs on Chinese goods by an additional 10%, bringing the total to 20%. March 4th, the day after, China imposes 15% tariffs on U.S. goods. April 2nd, in a Liberation Day speech, Trump announces an additional 34% tariff on Chinese goods, citing China's 67% trade barriers. April 9th, U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods rise to 145%. China escalates its tariffs on U.S. goods to 125%. China halts soybean purchases from the U.S. That's in May. May 10th, Chinese and American officials meet in Geneva, Switzerland, in an attempt to defuse trade tensions. We gotta meet and bring peace. This is getting out of control. I mean, that's been man's way. We have to take the long view of any of these agreements. We have to view these events through the lens of Bible prophecy. We have to see where this world is headed. And you can look at the timeline and see. Man has not been able to make or sustain peace for very long at all. All of them, they're just like the Hamas deal. They're just kind of hanging by a thread. Well, okay, we get another force in there in Gaza. We'll send in Turkish troops. Israel says, no way am I going to agree to that. Turkey hates us. Erdogan hates Jews. So what's the long-term possibilities of some of these agreements? And then, just as I said last week, just the confidence in the negotiators, the confidence even among some of the talking heads on the conservative side, the confidence coming from the Jeroboam administration, the confidence coming from the diplomats. You heard the reality in the cold open. You know, it's nice to be able to make an agreement, a peace agreement, between these two individuals that seem to like each other. Because with most of these, I don't see that. I see a lot of hatred. That's the reality. What we see in the timeline with China and the U.S., a lot of hatred. Now, one could argue that, well, you've got to show a hard line before you get them to compromise. Okay, well, I suppose that's better than just compromising with them over and over and over again. There's another clip, I'll just skip it, but it talks about the many compromises that the dear leader made to the Chinese. And you know all about the Biden crime family. So again, you've got a lot of people in the MAGA movement saying, well, it's nice to finally have a leader there fighting for U.S. interests, exposing China for all of its duplicitous behavior. But my point, just to take the larger view here, is this kind of hostility, animosity, this spirit of competition and strife, it's all over the place. But there is, as I alluded to earlier, a wonderful world of tomorrow that's coming. And we're drawing very close to it. And how do we know this? Well, because we're seeing all these other prophecies unfold just before the reality of Revelation 11 and verse 15. We read it earlier. It'd be good to read it again. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.